This episode of The Trail Went Cold is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/cold and enter the promo code COLD. That's casper.com/cold and the promo code is COLD. Thank you and enjoy the show.
February 25th, 2014. Perranporth, England. The nude body of an unidentified male is discovered after washing up on Perranporth Beach. The victim has a sock stuffed in his mouth, which has been tied in place by headphones. He is soon identified as 64-year-old Alan Giel, who hails from the town of Wadebridge. Investigators use CCTV footage to track Alan's movements on the night before he was found, but the footage opens up several perplexing questions, leading to debate about whether Alan committed suicide or was a victim of foul play. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest minisode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today I will be venturing back to the United Kingdom to cover a fairly recent, but incredibly bizarre mystery. The unexplained 2014 death of Alan Giel. And this one is actually a request from a listener I met at CrimeCon named Ellie, who traveled all the way from the UK to attend the event. Ellie is a huge fan of this podcast, and we spent quite a bit of time chatting about true crime over the weekend. She requested I cover this case from her homeland, and since she was such a delight to talk to, I couldn't say no, so thanks for the suggestion, Ellie. Incidentally, Ellie has also been a guest co-host on a couple of episodes of the podcast Mysterious Circumstances, hosted by Justin Rimmel, which I highly recommend you check out. Anyway, the case on this particular minisode was previously covered in an article I wrote for listverse.com titled 10 Unsolved Mysteries with Creepy Surveillance Footage, which was published in August of 2015. It involves the apparent drowning of a 64-year-old loner named Alan Giel, and on the surface, it might seem like an obvious suicide, but there are just so many strange things about his death which don't add up. The big wildcard in this story is some closed-circuit television footage, which tracked Alan's movements on the night before his body was found. The footage opens up a lot of unanswered questions which have never been satisfactorily resolved. No matter how many scenarios you dream up as a potential solution to this mystery, none of them completely hold together. But we'll get into that momentarily. Before we get started, just a brief reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast which alternates between our regular full-length episodes and shorter minisodes like this one. We deliver either a new full-length episode or a new minisode every Wednesday. We're currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it. The Trail Went Cold also has its own PayPal account and a donate button on our website. If there's anyone out there who wants to make a donation, we would greatly appreciate it, and we'll be sure to give you a shout-out on a future episode. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the mysterious death of Alan Giel. Our story begins in England in 2014 in the small Cornish seaside resort town of Perranporth. At around 2 p.m. on February 25th, the body of an unidentified man was found washed up on Perranporth Beach. He appeared to be in his 60s and had a white beard and a white receding hairline. Aside from a pair of socks and one shoe, the victim was completely nude. Curiously, a rolled-up sock was stuffed in his mouth, and it was held in place by some white headphones from an iPod Shuffle, which were looped around the back of the sock and trailing out of his mouth. He appeared to have a flesh wound on his scalp, along with a cut on his right hand and noticeable injuries to his chest. and it was later discovered that he also had some significant internal injuries. Even though there were signs of a possible drowning, the victim's exact cause of death was never officially released. However, the police did consider his injuries to be suspicious and not entirely consistent with drowning. In particular, there was no easy way to explain the injury on the victim's scalp, as it seemed unlikely that it could have been caused by the current flinging him against a rock or any other object near the sea. Investigators looked into the possibility that the man might have fallen off or been thrown off a boat somewhere, but turned up nothing. In addition, a rucksack, a navy blue regatta jacket, and a shoe were found on the beach near the body, and since the shoe matched the one that the victim was wearing, it was assumed that all of these items belonged to him. The jacket contained a wallet with £95 inside, alongside an old photo of a toddler with the date April 13, 1952 written on the back. However, it contained no form of identification, so the victim would temporarily be classified as a John Doe. Anyway, the photo of the child was publicly released in hopes that someone would recognize him, but no one did. So an artist created a composite sketch of the man, and immediately after it was shown in the media, he was recognized by his siblings as 64-year-old Alan Geel, and it turned out that the toddler in the photo was Alan himself when he was only 2 years old. Alan was a pensioner from the town of Wadebridge, located 24 miles southwest from Perranporth. He was known to be something of a loner who led a quiet, simple life and had limited interaction with his family. In fact, it seemed like most of his social interaction came from playing online games, which was one of his favorite hobbies. All that being said, Alan seemed to be in good health for his age and did a lot of walking to keep himself in good physical shape. So investigators started looking into Alan's life and would discover that he had purchased a 10-kilogram weighted training vest and some 2-kilogram ankle weights shortly before his death. This could be taken as a sign that Alan had decided to commit suicide and purchased these items in order to weigh himself down in the water and drown. However, neither the training vest nor the ankle weights were ever found. Alan's clothing was never recovered, as well as his bank card, credit card, Nokia mobile phone, and the iPod Shuffle for the headphones wrapped around his mouth. Things got even stranger when police started checking the footage from several closed-circuit television cameras in Perranporth and the surrounding towns. They were able to track Alan's movements and build up a timeline for his whereabouts on February 24th, the night before his body was found. But this footage only wound up creating more questions than answers. Okay, so given that Alan rarely spoke with others, no one knows what compelled him to leave his residence in Wadebridge. We do know that on the evening of February 24th, CCTV footage showed Alan in the town of Truro at 6:15 p.m. Truro is about 24 miles south from Wadebridge, 7 miles southeast of Perranporth, and Alan had traveled there by bus. He apparently walked around the area for a while, but at around 6:45, the footage showed Alan waiting for a bus at the Lemon Quay station in Truro alongside three other unidentified people. Alan appeared to be speaking to one of them, and police urged these witnesses to come forward if they had any information, but no one ever did. At some point, Alan got on another bus to travel from Truro to the town of Newquay, which is about 13 miles north. The CCTV footage showed him getting off the bus at 8:16 p.m. and spending the next 45 minutes or so walking around through Newquay. He then returned to the bus station at 9 o'clock, and got on another bus at 9:15 to Perranporth, which is located about 6 miles southwest of Newquay. The last CCTV footage of Alan would show him walking around in Perranporth between 10:25 and 10:27, and this would turn out to be the last confirmed sighting of Alan before his body was discovered the following morning. Now, like I said earlier, no one knows why Alan was traveling to all these places that night, but this just seemed to be the way he operated. He was a quiet loner who kept to himself and did a lot of walking to keep himself in good shape. Apparently, he liked to spend chunks of his spare time just wandering around from place to place. When he was a young man, Alan actually spent a lot of time in Perranporth and seemed to have fond memories of the place. When you consider all this, Alan deciding to spend an evening traveling to different locations before taking his own life is not a far-fetched scenario, but there are some odd things which have never been addressed. The biggest discrepancy was that Alan could be seen wearing a light blue raincoat in the CCTV footage,
but the jacket which was found on the beach containing Alan's wallet was a blue navy regatta jacket. So not only had Alan's clothing gone missing, but the one piece of clothing which was found near his body might not have actually belonged to him. Investigators looked into many possible theories. They wondered if Alan might have died as the result of a sex act gone wrong, as the sock which was tied to his mouth could have been some sort of attempt at autoeroticism. And apparently, some of the sand dunes located near Perranporth Beach were rumored to be a popular site for gay men to hook up and have sex. While there was no indication that Alan was gay, investigators did appeal for members of the gay community to come forward if they had information, but this lead went nowhere. At one point, the police announced that Alan might have had a friend in Plymouth who could help them with their investigation, along with another friend in Redruth, but they never elaborated on this. Since Alan was known for online gaming, that might be how he made contact with these alleged friends. For a while, the case generated a lot of publicity in the UK media, and even got featured on the popular TV program Crime Watch. However, by September of 2014, the police announced that they were winding down the investigation. While they couldn't rule out the possibility that Alan was the victim of a crime, there was no hard evidence of foul play, and unfortunately, there haven't been any significant leads in this case for 3 years. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Before we continue, let's take a brief moment to talk about Casper. The Trail Went Cold is very grateful to have Casper sponsoring this episode. This podcast often shares some very scary stories which could potentially keep you up at night. So that's why it's very important to have the right mattress on hand to make it easier to get a great night's sleep. Well, Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. They are revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the customer. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. The mattresses are made of supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. In fact, the Casper mattress meets the Goldilocks standard of just right because it's not too hard and not too soft. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. So if our podcast is causing you some restless nights, try sleeping on a Casper mattress. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that you technically spend a third of your life on. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. Wow, yes, that's right, 100 days. And you don't even have to lie down in a showroom, which is a good thing, since statistically, lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation as to whether or not it is the right bed for you. Casper's mattresses are made in the USA, and they offer free shipping and returns to both the US and Canada. And since The Trail Went Cold is responsible for keeping you awake at night with our creepy stories, it's only right that our listeners receive a special offer. So you guys can save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/cold and entering the promo code COLD. That's casper.com/cold and the promo code is COLD. Terms and conditions apply. So thank you very much and enjoy the rest of this episode. Man, out of all the details and all the cases I've covered on this podcast, I'm not sure any of them are more poignant than Alan Giel having a photograph of himself as a toddler in his wallet when he died. I think one of the saddest elements of this story is that there don't seem to be any real modern-day photographs of Alan available. If you do an online search for him, all you'll find is the artist's rendition of his face when he was still an unidentified John Doe, and the stills from the CCTV footage, which were shot from a distance and don't provide a clear look at him.
The only other photograph of Alan I've seen was provided to the media by his family, but it shows him as a much younger man and was obviously taken decades earlier. So it seems that Alan led such a solitary, reclusive existence that no one had taken a picture of him in a long time. On the surface, there is a lot to suggest he might have decided to commit suicide. He was carrying a childhood photograph of himself and made an unexplained trip to Perranporth, a place where he spent a lot of time during his younger days and seemed to feel pretty comfortable with. So he may have decided that this would be the ideal place to take his own life. Since Alan was such a loner and rarely interacted with anyone, there's really no way to know if he was displaying any suicidal tendencies. But then again, there are many examples of socially active people who don't give off any warning signs before they shock everyone by suddenly committing suicide. You often can't predict something like that, so speculating about Alan's mental state isn't going to provide any answers. In order to determine whether his death was suicide or foul play, we have to look at the facts, and, well, they're pretty confusing. If it wasn't for the state in which Alan's body was found, I'd probably lean towards suicide. It's really tough to explain why he'd have a sock stuffed in his mouth wrapped with iPod headphones, but we really don't know Alan's mental state, so who's to say he didn't decide to strip naked and tie a sock to his mouth before committing suicide? I think the biggest issue is that we don't know Alan's exact cause of death. I'm not entirely sure if the police deliberately withheld that information, or if they don't know either. They said Alan had external and internal injuries which were not consistent with drowning. Even though there's some large rock formations at Perranporth Beach, investigators did not believe he could have gotten those injuries by simply being thrown against these rocks in the water. I've seen photographs of the beach, and I guess it's possible that Alan could have climbed to the top of these rock formations and leaped off them to seriously injure himself, though I'm not sure if they were high enough for the fall to kill him. It's also possible that Alan was seriously beaten at another location before he was thrown into the water, and his body just happened to wash up on the beach, yet some of his personal items were found near his body. While there is some compelling evidence to support foul play, that theory doesn't completely hold together either. So let's go through Alan's movements throughout the evening. It was revealed that Alan purchased a weighted training vest and some ankle weights shortly before his death, which would support the theory that Alan was attempting to drown himself. But why weren't these items found? It just doesn't seem likely that Alan could put all these items on before he went into the water, yet each of them managed to slip off before his body washed ashore. However, we can't even be certain that Alan had the vest and ankle weights with him when he left his home in Wadebridge. It doesn't sound like these items were found at his residence, but Alan is shown carrying a rucksack in the CCTV footage, so maybe the items were stolen from the rucksack before it was left on the beach. But investigators have not ruled out the idea that Alan could have purchased them for someone else and given them away before his death. So we know Alan traveled to Truro and Newquay before he arrived at Perranporth, which would ordinarily seem quite unusual, but it sounds like it was pretty typical behavior for Alan to spend his free time wandering around from place to place. There's no real pattern for his movements that night. It's apparently just one of those things this guy did. Investigators speculated that Alan might have had plans to meet someone that night, but even if he did meet someone in Perranporth who eventually murdered him, why did he travel to those other locations unless he was just doing it to kill time? I know police wanted the witnesses Alan spoke to at the bus station in Truro to come forward, but given that this conversation happened several hours before his death, I'm not sure I'd place much significance on them. Maybe the person Alan spoke to was just someone he was asking for directions. If Alan did meet with foul play, I'd lean towards him being the victim of a random stranger rather than someone he knew. We know that Alan's iPod Shuffle, mobile phone, along with his bank cards and credit cards, were never recovered, so robbery might seem like a logical motive. But the problem is that £95 was left behind in his wallet, which is not an insignificant amount of money, and as far as I can tell, Alan's bank and credit cards were never used after his death. So this would be a robbery where the perpetrator didn't actually gain that much. I could support the idea that Alan removed his clothes before committing suicide and that someone stole them later, but again, why would they leave behind a jacket containing a wallet with £95? But the most perplexing clue is definitely the navy blue regatta jacket found on the beach,
which does not match the light blue raincoat Alan was wearing in the CCTV footage. At first glance, I might have thought the jacket was left there by someone else and had no connection to this case. In fact, a woolly hat was found on the beach near the other items, but the owner came forward to claim it, and it turned out to have no connection to Alan's case. However, Alan's wallet was found inside the regatta jacket. Now, I guess it's possible that Alan changed jackets in between the last time he was captured on CCTV and when he was killed. He could have conceivably been carrying the regatta jacket in his rucksack, put it on, and placed his wallet in the jacket pocket, and his blue raincoat wound up disappearing. And when you look at the CCTV footage, you can't rule out the idea that Alan might have been wearing the regatta jacket underneath his raincoat the whole time. But what if the regatta jacket actually belonged to someone else who took Alan's wallet and put it in their pocket, then killed Alan, and inexplicably left the jacket on the beach? I don't know. This is a real tough one. There's a lot to support the suicide theory, but just too many unanswered questions. And while there's compelling evidence to support the foul play theory, I just don't know why a murderer would strip Alan naked, stuff a sock in his mouth, steal his clothing and some of his personal items, but leave other items, including his money, behind. However, the nature of Alan's injuries does suggest that something really bad happened to him and that someone else was involved. The problem is that if Alan was a victim of foul play, I really have no logical explanation for how these events would have unfolded and how he was killed. I guess it's possible there is some truth to the police's theory that this was an act of autoeroticism gone wrong, but since we know very little about Alan's personal life, we can't really make any assumptions. If someone else did kill Alan, they essentially got away with the perfect crime, because police have never turned up any evidence to point to a suspect, and it looks like the investigation has ground to a dead halt. It's possible this may be nothing more than one of the most bizarre suicides ever, but I'm inclined to think there was foul play involved. The police, to their credit, seem to take this case seriously, and were not content to just write this off as another suicide, but it sounds like they've hit a dead end. Sadly, because this victim lived a very reclusive, solitary existence, it's tough to surmise what might have happened to him, but if he was murdered, he deserves justice. So if you have any information which could shed light onto the mysterious death of Alan Giel, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own theory about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Just wanted to give another shout out to my fans from the Unsolved Mysteries message board, the Sitcoms Online forum, and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. Need to provide a thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who is responsible for our eerie music score. We also received some new donations this week from Aaron, Jamie, and Sharon, and Ellie, yes, the same Ellie who requested today's case, she also signed up for recurring monthly donations. So thank you very much, guys. Your generosity is greatly appreciated. I should also mention that I was recently a guest on another podcast called Uncovering Unexplained Mysteries, which covers The Trail Went Cold's all-time favorite television show, Unsolved Mysteries. The two hosts, Josh and Mike, they are devout Unsolved Mysteries fans, and every week, they sit down and chat about a couple of segments from the show. They graciously invited me on to discuss a few classic Unsolved Mysteries cases, including Cindy James and the ghost of Teresita Bassa. If you visit the podcast Facebook group, you'll see some photos of Josh with a full-fledged tattoo of Robert Stack on his arm, and that's about as hardcore as an Unsolved Mysteries fan can get. So if you're also a big fan of the show, I highly recommend you check out Uncovering Unexplained Mysteries. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. And like I mentioned earlier, we also have a donate button on our website, so if you want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we'd be extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that.